Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, it's Wednesday night, and I'm pretty sure that we're going to have a call from Izzy, but he's not on the line yet. So I'd like to put some information out there for everybody. Number one is very important for myself and my family, and that is the fact that all of the trials, the hearings, everything are finally finished for my grandson. The young man that was found guilty of being the instigation behind the attack on my grandson took the plea that was offered to him several months ago, so we do not have to go back for any trials or hearings or anything. We are unbelievably grateful for the closure. We have never been vindictive about any of this. We've always felt that the people that do this for a living, and this is their realm of expertise, they would take care of what they needed to do. So we just did what was asked of us and had faith. And indeed, everything has been accomplished and is over with, finally. So we can move on. It's been a very long, we're just short of 4 years since all of this originally took place. So I want to thank everybody out there for all of the support and the love and the prayers and the positive energy that has been sent to us from actually day one. It just proves again how amazing we are as a people, as a unified nation. We are amazing. And when we think somebody needs us, we rise to the occasion, and there's no two ways about that. I have been in places many times in my life where I've seen this firsthand, and this time was the most, the biggest outpouring of love and support that I have ever witnessed. So thank you again, and I think we'll be fine now, and we owe some of that to all of you. So God bless all of you, and thank you, and we will always be here for you if any of you ever need us. I'm going to bring Shelly in. Izzy's not called yet. He's a very busy guy, but Shelly is on the line. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Reen.
So Izzy hasn't called yet. We didn't talk today, but we did last week. But he is amazingly busy. He's traveling all over and giving lectures and things like that. So he's a lot like you. When he calls me, a lot of times he's in his car. So we'll just wait until he calls in. But in the meantime, I just thanked everybody and told everybody about the finality that finally has occurred with all the trials and the hearings, et cetera.
Right.
So we are all very grateful for that. And a little update on my husband and my son. My husband is doing much better. He drove the car yesterday for the first time since his surgery, so I think that's a very positive step, yes. And Michael,
sure.
It's been hard keeping Michael down. He started driving, like 3 days ago and came over the other day and said, Mom, I'm going to go pick up water. I said, no, you're not. You know, he's so he goes next week, though, for another test, and they'll do they'll check his throat and everything and find out how long it will be before he has the second surgery. So that's another reason why this is such a blessing, to have this over with, so that it's not put into this mix of all the other stuff that we've got going on. The only sad part about it was is Melissa, my granddaughter, Valerie's and Mike's daughter, their oldest daughter, was due to fly in this weekend, and now that's been canceled. But I told the kids that's because she couldn't bring her babies with her, and so now it'll be even more exciting when all of this is over and they're back on their feet again. They can go up there and see Melissa and all the grandchildren. And by that time, she will have grandchild number four. So, she was going to fly down here, and she is like 2 weeks shy of being 9 months pregnant.
Well, you know, you ever heard the saying that things happen for reasons, so.
Amen, you know, amen.
Probably the best thing that she's not getting on an airplane then.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I said to Valerie. I said, this is just another one of those little things that you pushed out of your mind because we didn't want to worry about anything else, but that would have been, that would have been kind of tough. So,
Right.
So since Izzy isn't here, how about you fill us in a little bit on the people that you're going to ask Izzy about tonight?
I haven't really gotten too far into the book, but I can talk a little bit about it. But he had talked a lot about this book called Ancient Futures, and I forget the author's name, but the woman who wrote the book has been following these people called, and I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, I think they're called the Ladakhis, and it's in a place called Ladakh, which is Ladagh, if I'm remembering correctly. I haven't read the book. I haven't followed up in the last few weeks, so I'm kind of doing this off the top of my head. But it's in an area of the world that's bordered by Pakistan and India and Tibet, and I believe China's above it. And it's an area of the world. It's about 40,000 acres. And there's about 130,000 people that occupy that area, and they're basically broken out into two different groups. One of them is Buddhist, and I believe the other is Muslim. But both sects live based on the Golden Rule, and I think the book concentrates mostly on the Buddhist population. And but what they were talking about in the beginning is that here you have 130,000 people. So we're not talking a commune where you have a few dozen people or even a few hundred people living in harmony. We're talking tens of thousands of people that live in harmony with one another, that have exceptional health, they have virtually no crime, and it's because they live by the Golden Rule. So when you see a population concentration like that, all in one area, and again, I want to emphasize the fact that we're not talking a little commune somewhere up in the mountains, you know, where only a few people are. We're talking a civilization, a society of people, but that cumulatively have all been brought up to live by the Golden Rule. And until modern civilization moved in, which I think was a decade or two ago, that's when this woman started tracking them, when modern civilization encroached on them, then all of a sudden their equanimity, their balance, this way that they had lived for thousands of years, started deteriorating. And they realized it, and one of the emphases of the book is that they are trying to return to this almost euphoric way of life that they had before modern civilization encroached on them, because it affected their values. And this is one of the things that Izzy talked about, is that a lot of kids today aren't being taught appropriate values, and that's where a lot of their anger and dissatisfaction comes from. That's where they feel that they are justified in picking on somebody else or something like that. They're not taught the right type of values, where they're not even valuing themselves enough. Somebody who has a high value for themselves, who has a lot of self-respect, isn't going to tear down another human being. So when they talk about the character, the strength of character of these people, of this civilization, it's evident in the way they treat each other, the way they treat their older generations, the way they treat their children, and they're all brought up with this same mindset, which is something that we talk about all the time on this show, and it's just being good to each other, you know, doing unto others what you would have done unto you, and not doing unto others what you wouldn't want done to you. So it's both proactive and prohibitive. It's proactive in that you're acting in a way that you would like people to act towards you, but you're also not acting in a way that you don't want people. So there's both sides of the coin there. And the beginning of the book kind of grabs me, but it's been so hectic to me the last couple of weeks I wasn't able to read more. But it's interesting to note that until outside influences came in and messed with this, that they lived for centuries upon centuries this way without deviation when they were left to their own devices. But a lot of the materialism, a lot of the cynicism has encroached on them, and they became, you know, where TV shows became more important, and people started suffering from depression and some diseases. They weren't eating their simple diet anymore. Fast food started coming in. So, and here they had an impeccable diet. They had an impeccable way of living. So their physical health, their emotional health, everything was just such in balance. And then that was messed with some of the conveniences and some of the materialism of the outside world. So it really does make you look at a little bit of how materialistic a society we are, how we put importance on things that we shouldn't, like the clothes somebody's wearing or the shows they watch or something like that. And it kind of puts it in perspective when you see how these people were affected by that once it started coming into their way of life that was really almost like a utopia for quite a long time. And what it is now that they've recognized that, and that's this author, I want to read her sequel now because she's tracking them, and now that a lot of the seniors in the group have recognized that that's why there's been some deterioration with the newer generation, they're trying to roll that back and sort of blend the both. So that's going to be an interesting recovery that's going to provide an example for the rest of the world, because if they are able to marry the old live by the golden rule way of life they had with some of the newer technologies and things like that and get a balance where somebody can enjoy these things but keep it in the proper perspective and keep a happy life, this is going to, again, be a role model for the rest of the world to pattern themselves after and get people treating each other better and having happier lives as a result of it.
Well, let me ask you something. Just your own personal point of view. Do you believe once somebody gets a taste of all the material things, I mean, because while you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, let's see. Here I sit in a nice big house, and I have this really cool desk that I bought from somebody that he built himself, and I have my laptop computer, and I have my cell phone beside me, and I look around me, and I have all these wonderful mementos, well, you've been in my office, of days gone by, many gifts, books, signed by the authors, pictures of friends and people. And although a lot of it isn't worth much when you talk about monetary things, some of it is. You know, it isn't, not everybody can, you know, have several TVs in a house, and not everybody has three or four computers in a house and things like that. We are not wealthy people. We do not have a whole lot of money. So my belongings are not as ostentatious as I know some people's are. I mean, I'm always looking at that, you know, pictures that they show of the movie stars' homes and stuff like that and think to myself, oh, my good God, why do they need all that stuff? But by the same token, while you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, would I want to not have these things that I've become accustomed to? I would not like that. I would not like to not be able to watch TV when I go to bed at night. I would not like to not be able to walk into any room in the house and turn on a television. I've become very accustomed to that. I've become very accustomed to having a cell phone, a car that runs pretty, you know, pretty dependably, air conditioning in my home, all those kind of things, a good washer and dryer, which are the things that most of us all live with today. In other words, I'm saying I don't live an ostentatious life, but I have a comfortable life. So now, if we were to make a difference in the world, one of the things we would have to do away with, and one of the things that the Golden Rule kind of sidesteps, is jealousy. You've got something I don't have, or I've got something you don't have. So where do you think that those kind of things would put us? Say we decided, just our group, just you and me and our friends and our families and everything, decided that we wanted to truly live by the Golden Rule. How, treating each other, I get. That part would be easy. But what about the struggle to keep up with the Joneses? How would that fit into that scenario?
But that's the whole point. In the Golden Rule, you don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Each person is okay with their particular lot in life. This is one of the things, this part I did read in the book. So there isn't competition.
Good.
If your neighbor was lucky enough to be able to acquire more things than you, there's no jealousy. There's no looking at them and feeling like you're a victim, and why are you so unlucky and you didn't get that. Each person is, first of all, they're very, very grateful for whatever they have, whether it's something very, very little or something opulent, okay? They're just a very grateful, sincerely grateful, loving people. But they put their property in proper perspective. If you had someone that was very well off and that did have wealthy things and they literally lost it overnight, they would not feel victimized. They would not feel damaged. They would be able to sidestep that and say, okay, well, this is something that just happened to me today. I'm going to recover. I'm still alive. I'm still okay. And they pick themselves up and they keep on going. They talk about how they are taught to deal with loss. And what it is that they're taught to appreciate, not take anything for granted. So none of them have a sense of entitlement. They don't feel that they deserve anything, okay? But in the same token, they do believe that they're supposed to have happy lives. So they choose to have happy lives. And whatever comes their way, when they get good things, they genuinely appreciate it. And when they get things that may be a challenge or they suffer a loss, they don't allow themselves to sink into a victim mindset, which is then what leads to jealousy and feeling that you're like, why does your neighbor have this and you're not, and it's not fair. They never go there. It doesn't mean that they don't suffer, you know, that they don't have what we would consider to be bad things, but they don't react to them like they're bad things. So they always stay whole. It's a civilization that does not embrace a victim attitude. So that, you know, so when they're in a good place, they're happy, and when they're in what we would consider a bad place, they're still happy and contented with whatever their lot shows to them. So you don't have this jealousy, and because of that, they have no crime, virtually no crime, and the people that do have a tendency to be very generous with what they have. So you also don't have people trying to protect what they have because they have a sense of wanting to share. So it's a very, very loving civilization. It's very giving. And that's another reason why you don't have that victim, because you have people the people that do have are willing to share with the people that don't have. So you have this constant interchange of high emotions, good emotions, showing care for one another. And so even if somebody doesn't have what you have, they can come and they can touch it and they can take advantage of it and they can experience it because they're very open with each other. And that's one of the reasons why they don't really have any crime.
Well, and that, of course, makes perfect sense. And that is the basis to most of our crime. That is the basis. Not completely, not totally, but if you were to take the time to evaluate, just take one state that has high crime, Florida has high crime. And if we evaluated what it's about, it's often about people not having enough, people turning to drugs or alcohol or both, or and trying to support those kind of bad habits and not doing it in a you know, a 9-to-5 job. So, but again, it all stems from, if you go dig way down to the roots of that problem, it's about feeling like you don't have as much as everybody else, and that you're not
right.
as good as everybody else, and you're not as happy as everybody else, and you're not as pretty as everybody else, you're not as thin as everybody else. All of that crap is what piles on top of you and turns us in to people that I really believe most of us don't want to be. And if we set out and made a choice, a conscious decision to not be that person, I think that would help a little bit, but it wouldn't always, you know, it wouldn't always fix the problem. Now, when you say to me that when you have somebody who has been very successful in a community like this and they share everything, again, I am very reminded when you said that to me of my very, very good friend who won the Florida lottery several years ago, almost 20 years ago now. And it was a huge amount of money. And he has a big family. And he told me one day that the money ruined his family. And I said, but why? You gave something to everybody. Everybody had new houses. The kids that needed businesses so that they'd have good jobs and good. He did all of that. That's how he spent most of the money. And he said, but it's, if one of them does really good with what they decided to do, then the other one's looking at him and saying, well, you know, he's doing better than I am. I need more. And I said, well, I guess then it's up to you to keep the balance. And he said, I don't want to. I wish I never got this money. So when you talk about somebody who makes those kind of decisions, first of all, that would take an incredibly wise person to be able to fairly dole out. Now, when you talk about an a people that start out like that and never know anything different, it's not going to be the same as trying to change everybody, right? I mean, you'd agree with that, right?
Say that again.
If we were talking about trying to have a village, so to speak, of people who followed the golden rule and shared and did for each other and all of that stuff, it would be one thing to have them never know anything different than that, and another thing to take a group of people like us and stick them in this village and try to get them to live that way. You would agree that it would be two different stories, right?
I believe it would be two different stories, but I also think that it's something that can happen, and I think that on a consciousness level, I think that we're trying to move there. I think that's why books like this interest people. I mean, this book is on the bestseller list. People are interested in this civilization. People are reading this book. I highly recommend it, by the way. Again, the name is Ancient Futures. I got it from Amazon. And the bottom line is people are fascinated by this. And more people are wanting to care for each other. People are wanting to feel better about their lot in life. And I think that just like everything else we're trying to do with this show, I think on a grassroots effort, just improving one person's life at a time, eventually it will get to the tipping point. And more people will think like this, and it won't be the exception to the rule. It'll start becoming the rule with the masses. But you're talking something that's going to take some time to affect that way. But that's why I'm excited about where this author is going with the book, because she's studying them to make a commentary to the rest of the world as kind of like a role model. Look, these people live this way. We encroached upon them. They lost their way. But now along with our current way of life, they're finding a way back to their way of living with the golden rule, and yet still partake of some of the you know, of the new technologies and things like that. And they're finding a balance, and they're bringing their culture back and the modern civilization at the same time. So I'm fascinated. Like I said, I can't wait for the next book to come out for that reason alone, because that's exciting to me, because more and more people will look at it. And then you'll have people that will be excited by her information and will start talking about it, like me, all right? And more people will hear about it and say, you know what, it's possible. It's possible for us to live like that. Even if it's only me, even if I'm the only one in my neighborhood that's living that way, you know what? I'll be a role model for other people. And eventually, as people see good role models emerging, then you'll have people wanting to pattern themselves after those particular people. The problem is, for the last few decades, we haven't had really strong role models, but I think people want to go back there. I think there are people recognizing that we need strong role models, and there are some people that are willing to step up and into that position.
Well, and I would agree with that completely. I would agree with the fact that like I said tonight when I thanked everybody, now that all of this trial stuff and everything is over, and I've mentioned this on the show many, many times, I've lived a life that has had some pretty drastic ups and downs, and it never hurt me. It always taught me something and made me a little bit stronger. But what I can say without any qualms whatsoever, that if you are in trouble, if you need the support of other people, there are millions of people out there that you've never laid eyes on, that have never laid eyes on you, that when they see that you really need their support, they rally. So I believe it's in our hearts, in our souls, in our minds to be that person. But what I'm saying, and I know I'm throwing a damp rag on everything, because nobody's a bigger Pollyanna than I am. I want everything to be nice. Izzy makes fun of me about this all the time. It's never going to be like that, Renee. It can't be like that, because we're people and we just don't. And I'm like, well, does that mean I can't think about having it be that way? And he goes, no, I guess not. And I said, well, for me, I think it's very possible. But on the same token, I do see the other side of that issue. I'm a Libra, and I always see both sides of a story. And there are people out there who have become so power-hungry, money-mongering, and self-centered that even if they saw somebody, their first thing that would come to their mind is, what's in it for me? Right. And I hate to put that out there, but I must tell you that that is the truth. There's a lot of very, very wealthy people out there that never do a damn thing for anybody. It's usually the ones that are in pretty good shape, but they don't have time or energy or money to just hand out at any whim, but they do because that's who they are. It's not usually about how much somebody has in their pocket. It's usually about how much somebody has in their heart. So, and often they're not the same, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the whole thing is that, and you and I have both seen this, is that there are people that barely make it from paycheck to paycheck that are extremely generous with every dollar they have. And if they had $1 mm-hmm. left and you needed something, they'd spend it on you. I've also met very wealthy people, I mean rich wealthy people, that are the same. They're very generous with their time and their money. They're very respectful.
I'm losing you, Shell.
To them, or whether it's the deal of a
Shelly, you're fading in and out, honey. Are you going through a bad place?
Seeing the type of people.
Oh. Well, I've lost Shelley completely now. I don't, and she hasn't hung up the phone, but I'm sure she'll be on in a minute. There it goes. So, but the point she's making is a very valid one. As she said, there are people who have got a lot and will only give a little, and there's people that have a little and will always give a lot. And I guess you would call that human nature. But in a world where we all lived by the golden rule, which is probably what our maker had in mind. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
I'm losing my antenna in a different spot on State Road 7 now. I get to Atlantic every night. I was so excited about that, but now there's another spot where it always hangs up on me.
Yeah, well, you started fading in and out, and I don't think you could hear me either because I said, Shelley, I'm losing you, but you just kept talking, and then I lost you altogether.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't hear you.
Mm-hmm. So I just kind of reiterated what you said, you know, that, you know, those that have a lot often give a little, and those that have a little often give a lot. I mean, that's the way we are.
That's not what I was saying. What I was saying is I know people – In both areas, I know people that don't have two nickels to rub together, and I know people that are actually fairly wealthy, and some of the people that don't have a lot and some of the very wealthy people are extremely, extremely generous with their time and their money, all right? And some of the people for both classes are not. They're very self-centered. They have a sense of entitlement, even, you know, from both extremes. So what I'm trying to say is that in there's different types of people, whether that individual has money or not. There are people that are community oriented, that are caring and loving. Some of them have money, some of them don't. And there is another class of people that are extremely self-centered, and they really don't care about that. It's like what you said before. It's like, what's in it for me type of an attitude.
Yep.
And if they had a buck and you needed it, they just wouldn't let you know they had the buck, you know, whether they had it or not. So it has nothing to do with whether or not people have had money, because I've met extremely wealthy people that were extremely loving and caring and very down to earth. And then obviously I've met other wealthy people that really had airs about them and felt that they were better than people that didn't have money, you know. Meanwhile, like you said, I could win the lottery tomorrow and be a multimillionaire, and I would still be who I am, you know. And now I'm going to be shoulder to shoulder with you just because I have money, but I'm the same person I was yesterday. So, you know, but if you don't have money, they look at you as like you're a second-class citizen or even worse, you know. Oh, and by the way, just a note about the lottery, because it kind of struck a note with me. I've seen this show a lot, how the lottery changes your life. And I got to say, I always used to have the attitude that if somebody won the lottery, you know, that in most cases it can be a negative thing, it can backfire. You always hear these stories about lottery winners going bankrupt a couple years later. But according to these statistics, which is kind of a fun fact, by the way, according to these statistics, only about 30% of lottery winners do go bankrupt and have misfortune as a result, which means more than two-thirds of them keep the money, and most of the people that win the lottery actually do very constructive things with it where they don't feel that it was a bad thing that happened to them. I saw some of these stories where, you know, they were talking to the people years later, and they just did incredible things with their money for their families, for their communities. They changed their own lives. And they were mostly very, very positive stories. Every now and then they'll throw one in where somebody's like, oh, it's the worst thing that ever happened to me. I wish I hadn't won it. But I got to tell you, it's the exception to the rule. Most of the people just had amazing stories. And like I said, this is years down the road. And then they showed what they were able to do. The one guy, it was like, I think, 27 years after he had won $30 million. And, oh, my God, the things he did across that 27-year life, he changed the life of every one of his friends. They were still working in business with him. They all thought that he was the most incredible guy, but he was, like, very down to earth, and he was a musician. So he actually created a night where musicians could get exposure. He actually created his own record label. And stuff. I mean, it was just incredible all the businesses he created. And that's just one story, but I've heard dozens of them like that. So, again, that kind of shows something where, yeah, a lot of people get the money. They don't know what to do with it. They don't have the right mindset. They have family members that have senses of entitlement that really it's not their winnings, you know. You know, if they gave you $10 or $10,000, anyway, it's generous. They don't owe you anything, you know. But that's the problem. People get a sense of entitlement, and they ruin it for the person if the person doesn't have, you know, a kind of a mindset on how to deal with it. But the majority of people do, and the majority of people ended up doing really wonderful things with it. So I kind of wanted to put that little tidbit out there.
Well, I think my friend was happy that he won it. I think my friend was disappointed in the others.
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter. You know, he thought he was doing good stuff, and indeed he was.
Well, one of the guys
But he felt like it. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the guys that they interviewed actually said, you know what, I did a really, really good thing here. You know, I helped so and so and so and so, and you know what? If they didn't appreciate it, or if it made them just want to come back to me for more, he said, that's on them. I still feel good about what I did for them. And he said most of the people I helped did appreciate it, and it helped made their lives better. And he said for the few, and it was really only a few, he said for the few that became knuckleheads over it, he said, that's on them. But I still know that I did a good thing, and each person is going to take that and do with it what they want. But that's not going to prevent me from being generous with this and helping people out. And then ultimately it's up to them whether or not it's going to be a good or a bad experience for them. But for me, it was a good experience. So I kind of like how he put that. I thought it was kind of a cool comment, the way he put it, you know.
Yeah,
they became
well, and that can be very true. I mean, that's true of a lot of different things when you do for other people, you know, what they get out of it and what you get out of it and is often different. But like I said, it was for this friend of mine, he thought he did a good job. He was just disappointed, and it was mostly his own children that and I said, well, that's because they're your kids, you know. So your kids will always be jealous of each other, and it will always be, you know, sibling rivalry of some kind, you know. So, well, I guess that Izzy must have got caught up in something. He said he was flying and doing things, but that he would probably be able to call in tonight, but something must have happened and changed that. So maybe he can be back with us tomorrow night. But one of the other things, I would love to do this, by the way. I would love to see if we could do some kind of a trial run somehow with this. Just spend an afternoon with a bunch of people. I mean, I guess you and I do spend time with friends that, you know, we just kind of give to each other, and if we get something back in return, it's just one of those things that we count as lucky. So in that regard, we're pretty blessed. We have an old friend back in town who's going to join us Saturday morning, kind of a surprise to see everybody. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody's faces when they show up. So I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Well, you know, I'm not going to be there Saturday.
Oh, that's right. You're not going to be there Saturday. That's right. Shelley won't be with us Friday night either. Michael Berganzi is back in town.
Oh, dear.
And,
how long is he here for?
Well, he's going to be here for a little while. But the first thing he said to me, am I allowed to come have breakfast with the Golden Girls? And I said, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know if he's going to be here for a whole other week, but if not, then maybe we can do something one night during the weekend. I would love to see him again.
Yeah. I think he's going to be here for a little while, but I will. He's coming over tomorrow, and I will find out what the deal is, what he's got going on, and what he's got cooking, and make sure that you get the opportunity to see him if he is going to just jump up and leave again. So, but one of the other things that I kind of was hoping we could have time to talk about beside all the stuff about this ancient futures and living the golden rule, which of course I would be in favor of, but again, it would all depend on how much of my comfort it took away. And I'm just being honest, you know, if we had to live by the golden rule and everybody had to start out even Steven, that would be hard for most of us. And quite honestly, even though I love, I know you explained, right? I know you explained that. That's why I brought that up. But that's what I'm saying. If you had to start out even Steven, even for somebody who's pretty mellow and likes to get along rather than fight, that would even be hard for me, was the point I wanted to make. So I know it would be hard for others, but when I guess I'm going to have to get this book and read it myself, because I do believe that that's the way it was set up to be. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the email that I got today. I shared this with Shelley earlier today. I got an email from a gentleman who lost his son in Columbine. And he is fighting really hard to have more background checks done for gun ownership. He's not trying to abolish guns. He's going for a much more liberal way of doing things, but also possibly a way of keeping guns out of the hands of the wrong people. I want to say that I would be in favor of that, and I will have some stuff on my Facebook page, and I will give information to anybody that wants to call into the show. I've emailed this gentleman, and I hope I hear back from him, and I hope he will talk on the show and share with us. Of course, he has survived a parent's worst nightmare, and it's something that if you're a parent, you worry about it from the day they're born until the day you die. And I say that with all honesty and earnest feelings. It's just something you never stop worrying about. So the email that he sent to me is very kind, very level-headed. There's nothing about it that makes me think like he's trying to be radical or anything. So I told him he has my support. Ask him to email me back. When I do hear from him, I will share with all of you, and like I said, hopefully I could get him to talk on the show. I know I have a lot of friends out there who grew up and are still in upstate New York, and were hunting, and deer season, and even though it's not as big as it used to be, it's still a big part of a young man's life. One of the ways many fathers and sons bond with each other is by hunting. And I remember my dad hunting. I remember my husband hunting, my brothers. We left upstate New York before my kids really got interested in it. But we've all shot trap. We've all shot skeet. We know how to shoot guns. My husband used to have a gun rack in the house in upstate New York with 5 guns in it that was locked, but he would shoot on Sundays at a shooting range, and he always hunted. So it's one of those many of our freedoms that it's a shame it has to be taken away because some people get crazy, I guess is the best way to put that. But to know that everybody has to go through the same kind of paperwork and can prove that they are who they say they are and do all that kind of stuff, I would be in favor of that. I don't know how everybody else feels about it. If you would like to take part in that conversation. The night, even if this gentleman doesn't call me, we will choose a night and talk about this if you all would like to do that. Again, you know, every time rights are only missed when they're taken away. So it's important that we hang on to as many rights as we can. But it's also important that we learn how to respect our rights and not to abuse them. So I do think it would be an interesting show. I do think there's a lot of turmoil and a lot of, a lot of anger going on out there about gun control for obvious reasons. So what do you think about all that, Shell? Shelly's not here again.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
My antenna's doing nutty stuff. Can you hear me now?
Yep, I hear you good now.
Okay, all right. Let me ask you a question. Do you remember how those boys got the guns that they used in Columbine? I mean,
no,
was it a
I really don't.
Gun?
I mean, that was like 12 years ago, the Columbine
because
thing.
I have mixed emotions towards that because on one hand, a lot of the crimes that are committed with illegal guns. So it's not so making it tougher to get a gun for other people, I'm not so sure is the answer because most crimes are not committed with guns that were bought through legal channels. So why make those laws more stringent? Why not beef up manufacturers and how they distribute their guns? Because a lot of the guns that commit crimes are guns that were gotten through not legal channels.
Well, because if that would be the way that you tried to remedy this problem, that would even be a more difficult thing to manage. I think what this man is asking is an easy fix and is a step in the right direction. I don't disagree that more should be done. I just think that rather than, you know, take guns away from every American is not the answer either. It shouldn't have to be one so far miles away from one side to the other side. There should be something in
that.
The middle that's going to start helping right away, and that makes sense to me. And, of course, you're right. If somebody's going to have a stolen gun, if somebody's going to, do everything illegally, but, you know, the boy that went in and shot his mother first and what was the name of that school? I can't think of the name of it. Sandy Hook.
Okay.
Those guns his mother had bought.
Oh boy.
And she taught him how to shoot them. Yes. So again, you know, mom's background was a little kooky. You know, there was something there that wasn't really quite right. So, again, though, like I mentioned in the email that I sent to this gentleman, I agree with this. But, again, it's all about teaching people how to recognize what sounds good and what doesn't sound so hot. Because just writing yes or no, you know, have you ever shot anybody? No. Do you ever feel violent? No. How long have you lived at the same house? 40 years. Oh, well, you know, do you pay your taxes? Yes. You know, and do a background check like that. What are you going to know about them? Only what they want you to know. There has to be, it's like years ago they used to give psychology tests to people who wanted to become police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if they still do it. But a lot of stock was put in how they answered questions about minorities, men, how they felt about women, how they felt about men, if they had a happy home life, if they were balanced in those areas, those social areas, Not just that they'd, I mean, you know, you could be, you know, Jack the Ripper. He never got caught either.
That's right.
You know, so the point is somebody has to be trained to recognize the idiosyncrasies of somebody who is not playing with all 52 cards. And that's what's going to make the difference. And I don't mean somebody, I'm not talking about somebody who's got major mental health issues. I'm just talking about somebody who's got a real short fuse, somebody that,
right.
You know, for whatever reasons. And, of course, we talk about this kind of stuff so often, and we know there's so many people like that out there, some people that can be helped just by their lifestyle changing, either getting off booze or getting off drugs or getting off sugar. Can make all the difference in the world. But somebody needs to be paying attention to those things. And if somebody just comes in out of the blue, 45 years old, and says all of a sudden they want to be a gun owner, wouldn't that make you say, why? Why now at 45 do you need a gun? Wouldn't that just right there be kind of a flag?
No, I'm not so sure about that, because I never thought about owning a gun until I was 54, and you know, it's like, I mean, I didn't want it for any other reason other than because people are starting to get a little squirrely around me and I wanted something for protection. I mean, it wasn't
okay.
Anything more than that. Nothing happened to me, you know.
Okay, so then I'm the person selling you the gun, and I say, Shelley, you're 54 years old. What makes you want a gun now all of a sudden? And you say that to me, and I'm like, oh, okay. But you see, somebody had to ask that question.
Gotcha. Right.
You know,
right.
That would have been the first flag that made me say, and what brings you in here today to get this, you know, this whatever you're buying? Well, because I live in this neighborhood and I drive all the time and I see all this stuff and I'm a little bit worried about my own safety. If you explained it to me like that and sounded level-headed, I'd say, okay, fill out this paperwork and you can get yourself a gun. But if you came in and you were 54 and said to me, I need a gun right away, and I said, why? And you just looked at me and said, I just want a gun. I would say, oh, well, maybe we need to talk about this.
Right. I see your point. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that, and again, this is where training comes into play, that somebody
exactly.
would be able to hear those answers and have a different reaction based on, yeah, I see what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense.
Whenever somebody doesn't have anything to hide, they are more than anxious to share their story with you. Always.
Mm-hmm.
I have never met anybody that doesn't want to tell me everything. If they genuinely got something going on and they need to talk about it and they're on the up and up, they'll share. It's when they don't want to tell you anything that you need to, you know, have a little light come on. And I do think it would help. I don't think it will fix the problem completely. Absolutely not.
Uh-huh.
But I think everything, some of the things that we talk about on this show about recognizing when somebody's, you know, when their string is too tight, somebody needs to loosen it. When, you know, when things are getting too tough for them, you know, I have a lot of people in my life that I, one of my grandchildren this morning, who is so easygoing, one of the most roll with the flow kids I have in my life, and that's Joshua. He is 17. He woke up in such a miserable mood this morning. And I said, what's wrong with you? Nothing. I just don't want to be rushed. And I said, well, why is that anybody's fault but yours? If you didn't want to be rushed, sweetie, you should have got up earlier. Oh, well, you know, and he steps up to move and walks on the dog. The dog lets out a yelp, and he's ready to kick the dog. He loves the dog.
Aww.
You know?
Right.
But I looked at him, and I said, honey, stand still. And he's looking at me so frustrated. I think if he'd have thought he could get away with it, he would have marched right past me. But he didn't. I held on his hand and I said, take a deep breath. You don't want to spend your whole day feeling like this. And then he grins at me and he was okay. You know, that's all it took. That's all it took. And so many times, that's all it takes.
Wow.
That's all it takes. So if we all, you know, when you talk about the golden rule and doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, a lot of times that's what it's about, that simple gesture of saying, okay, take a deep breath, calm down, everything is cool. Guess who just called? Izzy. We'll let him in and find out what's going on and see if he's okay. Hello, this is Renee. Izzy, is that you?
Yeah, I apologize. First of all, I'm in a different time zone, and I have a very long drive today from city to city, and I completely forgot about it. And now I notice it's almost 7 my time, but it's like almost 8 o'clock your time. So I really apologize.
You know, okay, dear. You know, Shelley and I have been talking, and of course I said you'd be on the show tonight, and then after 10 minutes went by, I said, this man is traveling all over, driving from here to there, flying from here to there. I said, it won't surprise me, and we talked last week because I was so kerfumbled the last couple weeks. I said, I bet he's off on a trip someplace, and he's either in a different time zone or he's purely forgotten or can't call. So not to worry. I'm just glad you're okay, because I was a little bit worried, but I thought that's probably what it was.
Yeah, it slipped my mind till just now. I realized, you know, my daughter called me on the cell phone, and I thought, oh no, maybe it's you calling me. so I realized I didn't call. You know, you can always call my cell phone if you don't hear me calling in.
Okay.
I don't know if you can do that, but next time if you see I'm not calling, you can feel free to call my cell phone.
Okay, I will do that. Well, we talked a little bit about Shelley's been reading Ancient Futures, so we had a really, really good discussion about that. We talked about the fact that you had told us about that, and Shelley got the book on Amazon and has been reading it, and we talked about the pros and cons of being able to establish such a wonderful kind of lifestyle for all of us, and it was a great conversation. So you were here in spirit, Izzy.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, listen, you can continue talking. I'll just listen if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. That would be fine. That would be fine.
Okay.
So right now we're talking about the fact that I got an email from a gentleman who lost his son in Columbine, and he wants me to sign a petition for Obama and the rest of the entourage to change the rules about background checks for purchasing guns. And, of course, I am more than willing to do that. And we're talking about the pros and cons of what steps to take. I grew up in upstate New York. Guns are a big part of those people's lives. And I don't know that I would want to take guns away from everybody. And I don't know that this will fix the problem until we start being more observant. So Shelley and I had a good conversation about that. We're almost out of time, though. So I do want to say, so you'll be with us next Wednesday, Izzy? Are you in town?
Yeah, yes.
Is that going to work?
Yeah,
okay.
I'll be in New York. I'm not traveling next week, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Well, that sounds wonderful. So we'll have you on the show next Wednesday, and maybe we can even delve into this a little bit deeper, because I asked Shelley a lot of questions, and she answered them very nicely. But I think people would be interested in knowing, you know, some of the pros and cons about living that way. I've talked about all the many niceties and our lifestyles that we become so accustomed to. And I just think it's an interesting concept. I'm going to try to get the book myself so I can read it as well. But I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and thank everybody again for all the support during all the trials for my grandson. And everybody can say a big hooray tonight, because that's all over with, and we don't have to go through any more of it. So that's a big plus for my family and for all the people that helped us in the court I'd like to give a big special shout out to Maria Schneider. She's the assistant district attorney in Broward County in the juvenile division, and she is an amazing, amazing woman, and she never let anything slip by her. She was awesome. So I'd like to thank her and send a big Reenie hug to her as well. So thanks, everybody. This is Reenie from my heart to yours. Good night and God bless. Thanks, Shelley. Love you. And thanks, Izzy. Talk to you next Wednesday. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night.
Good night, everyone. Good night, Reen.
Good night, honey.
Good night, Shelley.